This show features adults using adult language. All music on the show is written and performed by Rudy Zuniga, who can be found on YouTube or Facebook. Howdy folks, I'm Caleb Sunstead, your host and game marshal. Sounds Like Crows is an edited actual play podcast where a posse of nerds pretend to be cowboys, improvising a story for ourselves and you. Our tale is set in the world of Deadlands Reloaded, a setting within the Savage Worlds system. The core rulebook is about $10 at your local game store, so skip a couple cups of coffee and pick it up. I highly recommend it. I have three older brothers, each one more degenerate than the last, and although they are deeply flawed, I still love them, and life would be a very strange place without them. I hope that this show will, in some way, share what I have with you. Welcome to the Weird West. The Colorado sun beats down mercilessly across the plains. It's about 90 degrees outside, I imagine. Almost no wind blows over the plains, and the camera pans down to two individuals, both sitting on horses. One of them has a nice white steed. It's got some brown splotches on it. And all of his clothes are freshly bought, store-bought. Very obvious that haven't been worn very long. There's not a lot of dust on them. And he's holding a shiny new Winchester. To the right of him is Lucky. What does Lucky look like, Cameron Day?
Lucky is a tall, lanky man with long, straight blonde hair covered by a beaten brown Stetson hat. Emerald green eyes that pierce like lances atop pursed chaps, sensual lips. A dusty white button-up with sleeves rolled up to the elbows hug his figure, along with his favorite sky blue vest, pressed and fitted above it. His hands crusted by years of physical labor, with the word Southpaw promptly on display on the back of his left hand, which almost always finds its resting position above his five-shooter, single-action revolver. On that revolver, sketched into the handles, is the name Lady.
Is it getting hot in here?
It is getting a little hot in here, yeah.
It's not just the sun, guys.
I was going to ask if anybody else's pants got tight.
The tender foot next to Lucky is looking down his sights, and you see when he's holding the gun, he's just got his finger on the trigger, kind of holding his hand too close to the grip. Doesn't look like he's very skilled with a rifle.
Lucky looks over to the young man, and he sort of just glances his way and says, make sure you look down the sights.
Okay, I know how to use a rifle, okay?
Then I guess you wouldn't be paying for these lessons. Now, would you?
He kind of glares at you but doesn't say anything. He aims down the sights and shoots at... What are you guys shooting at? What are you guys...
We're definitely shooting buffaloes.
You're shooting buffaloes?
Yeah.
He takes a shot at one that's not very far away, probably like 40 yards away or something like that. Misses completely, shoots wide. It starts kind of trotting off into the distance. Damn it! Come on! Aim down the sights! That's all you have for me? As the buffalo trots away, you can see that it joins a larger group of five additional buffalo, and they start to sort of tread off in the distance.
Lucky tells him to keep his eye on the prize.
He takes another shot at it. He's probably got a D4 in shooting at this point. He's not a wild card. He misses. Pretty close, but still wide. He goes, damn!
This time, Lucky actually was paying attention to his shot.
As the six buffalo trot off, Lucky, do you want to make a notice roll for me?
Oof. That's going to be a zero.
That's a zero? Did you roll a wild die with that?
I did not.
Hey, there you go. So anytime you make a roll in Deadlands, you roll a wild die, which is a D6. And since you rolled a six on that, he blew it up. What'd you roll total?
A nine minus two because I'm not proficient in that skill.
A, so a seven. The target number is always four. There's modifiers that add on or above, but four is always a success. As he takes a shot, you sort of look away, disinterested. And in the distance, towards home, southwest, you can sort of see a group of six birds flying in the air west.
Lucky's going to take note of these six birds. He's going to stare back at the sun, stare back at the buffalo. What day did you say this was?
How dumb are you, boy? It's April 6th.
I gotta be going now.
Wait, you gotta finish teaching me how to shoot this thing.
Luciano pulls out his revolver, aims at the what, 60?
60 yards away, that was
60
buffalo.
60 yards away, this buffalo. Takes an extra second to aim, fires. Red mist pours out of the buffalo head, and he smiles, revealing all gold teeth, and says, "How about steaks on me tonight, boy?" as he rides off.
The sun hits those golden teeth as you ride away. Cool. All right, we cut to your homestead, your farmhouse, your mama's farm. Did you guys call it anything growing up, or was it just the farm? Was it just the ranch?
I think we jokingly called it the nest.
The nest?
The nest. That's pretty good. The crow's nest.
I like that.
That's good. All right.
I don't think we really said it overtly often, but every now and then we would joke about it.
Cool. So you ride through the nest. Now, I imagine this lesson you were kind of given was in the evening a little bit, you know?
Yeah, most definitely.
Getting either. So as you ride home to the nest, the sun's going down. It's a beautiful sunset. A lot of purple in this one, and you can see sort of the silhouettes of the homestead and the nearby barn as well that houses the many horses your mom cares for. Yeah, you stand you sit on your horse overlooking it from a hill above. You're probably still, I don't know, 100 yards out.
He's definitely going to ride in.
You approach the house, and as you come closer, the sun's going down, and the front door is open. And from the inside, you sort of see lantern light spilling out onto the yellowish ground.
He's going to cautiously walk in.
You jump off your horse. As you push open the door, it gives a slow moaning creak. And inside, you see the living area. It's really just two rooms. There isn't even a door that separates them. You boys always slept up in the loft, which is up above. There's a ladder next to the fireplace that leads you up there. The kitchen table that your pa made many years ago stands toppled over in the center of the room. And one of the chairs has had one of the legs broken off, and it's scattered about on the floor as well. A lantern has fallen over from the table, but miraculously has not set anything on fire.
Lucky silently walks over to the lamp, picks it up, places it upright, and then yells, "Ma! Ma!"
You wait a moment, and there's no response.
He begins walking upstairs.
You make your way to the ladder and head upstairs. Everything's kind of as you left it. This is where you stay these days. Before, you know, all your brothers used to live here, but they've all gone on to bigger and better things while you've stayed home at the ranch. You looking for anything in particular?
Just to see if anything was, I don't know, messed with.
Do you want to make an investigation roll for me?
Certainly.
What do you got, investigation?
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good?
It's a d12.
That d4 blows up.
That d4 blows up.
That d4 does blow up.
This system blows up?
The system blows up.
Hell yeah.
Fuck yes.
All right, so that's going to be a 4 total.
Oh, man. I didn't expect you to make that.
No, dang. He's a badass.
Let's see.
And the campaign is ruined. That's it, folks. Wrap it up.
So your ma, unlike a lot of people, doesn't leave her rifle above the fireplace. She's always kept it upstairs. You don't know why that is. Could have something to do with your pa, but who knows. As you head upstairs, you can see that it's missing from its normal resting place upstairs. And in fact, it doesn't look like it's just been pulled down. One of the nails that would hold it up has been ripped out of the wall and is loosely on the floor nearby.
Lucky definitely feels like there's something ominous going on here. Perhaps there was a struggle of some kind. He's going to look outside the window and see if he sees anything.
You take a look outside the window, and you can see, you know, you've rolled pretty good investigation notice so far. You can see that the barn door is slid open. Just a crack, though, just like, you know, 2 feet or so.
Without anything else to go on, he's going to run straight to that barn.
Lucky runs outside. Halfway between the house and the barn, you see your ma's rifle on the ground, and it's got blood smeared on the stock of it.
He's going to run straight past that.
You run past and make it to the barn door. You push it open and take a step inside. It's really dark in here. Your eyes still haven't really adjusted to it. The horses are stirring restlessly in their stalls, making all sorts of noise. As your eyes adjust to the dark, you can hear something before you can see it. You can hear the dripping of water near the center of the room.
He stares at the puddle, and then his eyes drift upwards.
His eyes find his maw's feet, his maw's legs, his maw's torso, and his maw's neck being held by a noose connected to the rafters of the barn.
Oh, God, Ma.
And we cut.
Two, Cameron Reed, who's playing Harper Crow. What does Harper Crow look like? What's he up to?
The camera pans up from a pair of dirty boots, kind of tracks up a pair of leather chaps that are covering a pair of dark trousers. Got a Colt 45 in a quick draw holster on his right leg. It kind of moves up a little further. He's got a big belt buckle, and over his muscular body, he's got just a long sleeve shirt with sleeves rolled up to his elbows about. He's got a gray poncho with red detail work on him, tossed over his left shoulder, so it almost kind of hangs back like a cape, sort of. Kind of continue moving up to his jaw, which is covered with a short beard, and he's got long hair about ear length. He's got a big black hat on, and he's got a very distinguishable scar that sits over his left eyebrow. He's kind of walking through just like a dusty street in like a generic Western town with a man before him. It looks real dirty. Looks like he's been like living out, just like living out
real dirty
in the dust.
Cool.
And he's got a pair of handcuffs on him.
Cool.
Please, please, I don't need any trouble. You can let me go, all right? I can make it worth your while. You don't need to do anything about this, man. Come on.
So Harper doesn't say anything. He just kind of continues pushing him. And then the outlaw just kind of keeps babbling.
And he's walking ahead of Harper.
Yeah, he's right? Walking ahead, cool. Like about an arm's length.
Cool. He tries to turn around and face you as he walks backwards. He says, come on, man. Come on. You know what they're going to do to me? Come on. I ain't deserve this. I didn't do nothing that wrong.
Harper pulls up a Winchester 73 rifle that he's had in his left hand. And he just kind of points it at him into his right shoulder to kind of spin him back around. And he says, you shut your mouth before I shut it for you. He just kind of keeps pushing him. He notices an older woman kind of off to the right who's like looking on with like a little fear, but not... She's more curiosity than fear. Morning, ma'am, and tips his hat. And then she gives him a little smile, nods, and moves on. He comes up to the sheriff's building with the man in hand. He's going to just like push him up to the door, knock on the door, and just kind of hold him there until the sheriff comes out.
So the town marshal slowly makes his way to the door, and he opens up the door pretty slowly. He's a bigger man, obviously, eats a lot. All of his clothes are pretty clean. Doesn't even have boots on at the moment, you know. I think he maybe just has slippers on. He's got a gun belt loosely around his waist, but doesn't even have it tied down. He says, who you got for me today, Crow?
Don't you worry about that. I think this is Lieutenant. Unfortunately, I left a few dead back off the road a few miles. they were all in that one gang that was out here handling all those horses, and the sheriff interrupts him.
All right, well, I guess I'll take care of that later today, but I think you got more pressing matters, Harper. Telegram came for you.
And he holds out a piece of paper.
He takes the piece of paper and he takes a deep breath because Harper knows that a telegram is never good news, especially not from his family.
Yeah.
So he looks it down and the camera kind of pans over his shoulder and all it says is, Ma's dead. Stop. Come home. Stop. And it kind of spins around so you can see his eyes as they get really wide and all the blood kind of runs out of his face. And then we cut.
It's a little bit colder in Kansas than it is in Colorado. There are some owls hooting in the distance. Who do we see walking before us, Alex?
Ellis Crow stands at 6 feet tall. He's got wide shoulders, a wide jaw, jet black hair, well kept. His eyes are hazel in color, accented with thick eyebrows.
Hazel is probably a color, let's be honest.
I like it. Sounds
hazel.
Pretty.
Yeah.
Hazel. His face is clean shaven with a straight razor. He wears a charcoal-colored, finely tailored black suit, nice boots, black tie. His hands seem a little out of place. His hands are rough, calloused, the hands of a working man, and in them he holds a wide-brimmed black hat, well-made, looks like it's rather expensive. And he walks into a room lit maybe only by a few candles. In the room is a walnut desk, some very finely crafted chairs, and a woman who's sitting behind the desk.
So she's elegant, The clothes she's wearing, she's almost got a Sunday dress on, or at least most folk would call it that. It's red and shows a little too much cleavage than is proper in these times, I think. As you come in, she takes off her reading glasses, puts them down on the table. She says, everything go all right?
Ellis puts a large bag on the table. It thumps with the sound of coins inside. He says, it was a good trip. Went a lot better than last time, that's for sure. Everything okay here?
She gives you a coy smile and says, you got a telegram. I already opened it. And she gives you sort of sorrowful eyes as she stands up and brings the telegram over to you. As she extends it towards you with her left hand, her right hand sort of comes around your shoulders and rests on your back. As you open up the telegram, it just says, Ma's dead. Stop. Come home.
Ellis has kind of a blank stare. He hunches over in his in one of the chairs. He says, well, looks like I'm going to have to be going out again.
Guess I won't see you for a while, huh?
Guess not.
All right. And she just goes back to her desk, sits down, and puts on her glasses.
Ellis quietly gets out of the chair and walks out of the room.
The scene opens on a church filled with flowers. They drape from pillar to pillar. Children dance in the aisles, wearing the traditional colors of the Baratheon house.
God damn it.
I was like, drapes with flowers, like this is interesting.
You fuck.
The scene opens with a church that is not filled with flowers. It's a very somber tone inside here. As Ellis steps through those church doors. This is the kind of church, Ellis, that is used for a school, a church, town gatherings on holidays, and today as a courtroom. Up ahead, you see your brother standing behind the pulpit. Isaac, what does Abel look like?
Abel's a tall man, probably 6'4", fairly big. He's wearing the dusty clothes of someone who rides more than he should. They're black or gray or some such color. There's a vague hint to them of a military uniform, as if they've been slowly morphed into a proper set of clothes over time. Wears a black kerchief around his neck, and his hat's on the table, as it should be indoors. Running down the left side of his face is a series of scars that run from the ear to the front of his jaw. Looks like the skin was burned or puckered or pulled back. Gives him a really unpleasant look on that side. Right now, he's holding court in this room.
To his right, on a pew, is a man sitting in irons, overseen by the local lawman, the town marshal. Across the aisle from him, standing up from her seat in the pew, is a woman, and she's speaking up to Abel. Your Honor, that man murdered my pa, and, well, he drugged my ma, kicking and screaming, and I just...
Enough. Abel cuts her off. He pauses for a moment, and his attention is no longer on the case. It drifts up when he sees Ellis walk in the back door. They hold eyes for just 1 second before Ellis takes a seat. Abel sighs deeply.
As he doesn't take off his hat.
No, I definitely took off my hat.
Took off your hat.
I'm a classy man.
Abel stands and looks down at the man in chains. Shane Hillbrook, by the power trusted in me, by the great Confederate States of America, I find you guilty, on all counts. I've heard enough. I sentence you to be hanged by the neck until dead. Court adjourned. He slams the gavel on the podium.
Shane stands up and goes, this ain't right. You ain't even a real judge. I don't know why the hell you think you have power over me.
Abel takes a step down from the elevated platform, stares him in the eyes for a long moment. You got more to say, boy?
I swear, by all that's holy. He takes it hard and falls into the pew. His head smashes into the pew, and then he rolls over to the ground. The local town marshal kind of gives a chuckle as he grabs him and says, let's go, Shane.
Abel steps forward and puts his boot on the chest of the man on the ground. Enough. The law and our adherence to it is what separates man from the beasts over which we have domain. Your sins
and my office, conferred upon me by God and government, give me domain over your worthless life. You die tomorrow.
He walks towards the back with Ellis.
Ellis is standing to the side as the various town folk casually and slowly walk down the aisle, exiting the courthouse, waiting for his brother to approach.
Ellis, what brings you in?
Abel, you know I would only come here if it was important. I silently hand over the telegram to Abel.
Abel looks down at the telegram and just holds it for a long minute. Another deeper sigh before he hands it back.
I sent a telegram to Thaddeus. I think the other ones will, hey, it was his mother too.
So he says.
I think the others would receive a telegram. They're pretty stationary these days. I have something else for you. I produced from my pocket a train ticket.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks for coming to get me.
We leave in the morning. Would that be enough time?
I'm ready now.
Good to hear that.
Well, let me sell my horse.
Lucky, you're at the house. The town marshal, Clay Marston, along with, actually just him at the moment, he came and picked your ma's body up, probably with your help, and moved her into town. He told you that the mortician is coming down from Denver, but he won't arrive until probably later today. And for now, you're just sitting at the house, I imagine, a little bit aimless.
Lucky's definitely going to be he'll probably be sitting in his chair, maybe the one that, maybe next to the one that Ma used to always sit in, and just kind of waiting and just kind of thinking.
Over the horizon comes Harper Crow riding in.
Harper's walking. Harper doesn't have a horse at the moment.
Dang.
We cut 3 months later.
Well, yeah, if Harper walked down here, it'd take you a little bit. There's definitely a train station at...
I think he got a ride Silver. From a coach into town.
So oh, a stagecoach.
Yeah, he took a stagecoach into totally. Town. And then from there, he's going to be walking just from like the center of town into the ranch.
Perfect. You could definitely see the ranch's smoke on like a good day if something was burning in the fire. But it's a pretty fair distance away from town. I'd probably say 3 miles.
So he's been hoofing it. I think you would just kind of see him... maybe Lucky was lost in thought, kind of staring off. And then he just kind of looks over and notices him coming through the gate or just a little ways outside. All he's got on him is his clothes, and he's got this big duffel bag that he's kind of got over his shoulder. He walks up, opens the gate, walks a long ways from the gate to the house, looks at Lucky, and they just have like a long moment where they just stare at each other. And Harper just drops his bag and just kind of like takes a few quick steps up to him and just gives him a big hug. And they just kind of hold it for a second. And he says, how you hanging in there?
You feel Lucky kind of shake a little bit as he's talking. Ma's dead. And I wasn't here to help.
Hey, don't you start blaming yourself. What happened?
I'm not quite sure, actually. I just came back and she was in the barn, just hanging there.
Hanging? You tell me Mom was murdered?
Hanging, man.
He takes his hat and kind of tosses it to the ground and turns around with his hands over his head, visibly shaken and starting to get, like, he turns around and his face is bright red. He takes a few deep breaths. He says, you find anything?
Harp, I don't know what I should be looking for, to be honest. I saw her gun. It had some blood smeared on it. You can be sure she put up a hell of a fight, I'll tell you that much.
That means they gave her time to get her gun. All right, I'm gonna start looking. He grabs his hat off the ground, takes a step off the porch, and almost immediately kind of starts looking around.
Mind if I come with?
Oh, you come on.
He kind of trails behind.
So if you're looking for tracks, you need to make a tracking roll. If you're gonna like go over to the gun and investigate that, probably roll an investigation.
I am gonna do looking for tracks. Perfect. And I have a D6. 5.
Okay, so as you look around in the tracks, it's... Let's see, how long would it take you to get here, Harper?
I think I was probably like a few towns out. So with a stagecoach, probably a day.
Sure, yeah. After you receive the news, yeah. Cool.
How long does news take to travel? Like, how long would that...
Well, with the telegraph, it's like instant, right?
Yeah, I believe telegrams are almost instantaneous.
Okay.
They've got, to my understanding, they've got operators set up in pretty much every city across the West. Unless you're crossing the Mason-Dixon line, it's not really a big deal. And it's almost instantaneous. The operator still has to receive the message and write it down, and then it has to be delivered to a person. But other than that, it's instantaneous.
Neato.
What's the Mason-Dixon line?
The Mason-Dixon line is the divide between the United States and America of America and the Confederate States of America. A couple years ago, or a few years ago, I'm not sure about the exact dates. I'm not a historian, you know? That's not a good joke. Cut it.
hey, fuck you.
Yeah.
Cut that shit. Cut it all
up. Shut up.
No, I like it.
But the Civil War was not won by the North. The Civil War just sort of ended. Right now, they're in an uneasy ceasefire, which is almost similar to the Cold War between the United States and the USSR.
Gotcha.
But Caleb, for our UK listeners, what is the United States of America?
Yeah, I'd like to clear that up too.
Yeah, fuck off, guys.
How many states are currently in the United States of America? Caleb, where do babies come from?
You ask your mom about that one, Ellis.
She's dead.
You killed her.
Got him.
You killed her.
Got him. As you look around at the ground, Harper Crow, you notice a couple sets of tracks, actually. Without a race, I can't imagine that you'd see all the details, but you know all the tracks are there. Looks like a horse rode up nearby, stopped about 10 yards away from the house, and the rider of that horse jumped off, landing pretty softly, so wasn't in too much of a rush, and made his way up onto the porch where his tracks stop. And then a separate set of tracks, you can see your mama's boots running out, and she runs backwards for a moment, and you find a few shells in the ground nearby her gun, and there's just a single set of footprints following her towards the barn. Her footprints are far apart. Oh, wait, fix it.
You got it over there so good.
You got like a handful.
You got it over there so good. I didn't know it was open.
For all the listeners, in case this stays in, Alex just poured a shit ton of popcorn
Hey, Harper, shut the fuck up.
It was a shit ton of popcorn he poured on the floor. I waited until he was away from the mic.
And it's Chicago style.
I'm going to eat it still, too.
Do it.
You should, boy.
There's only cats and dogs in here.
We ain't got no food to waste.
So
what the fuck is Chicago style popcorn?
It is
cheese and caramel.
Cheese and caramel popcorn. It's pretty good.
Chicago does it weird.
The devil's butthole.
It's pretty good, actually. make sure
you get one. Oh, that's a shitload of hair, dude.
The hairy corn's the best, man.
Make sure you get a piece of cheese and a piece of caramel.
Yeah. What kind of hair was that, you think?
Dog hair, probably.
Dog hair, that was definitely. Caleb's hair.
Excellent.
But there was dog hair on the table, so it's probably...
I apologize.
Don't apologize.
I didn't know it was open. I thought it was closed.
Don't you apologize.
You win some and you lose some there.
Already in character over here. So what you can tell is that your mama's footprints are pretty far apart. You can tell she was running, at least until the point where her gun was dropped. And then you can see her footprints leading off towards the barns. Whoever was coming after her, though, their footprints are real close, like they were walking real slow.
Do I see any blood on the ground or anything of that nature?
You do see a little bit. You can see drops that follow your mom's footprints all the way from the porch to the barn.
So he squatted down looking at the tracks, and he looks back, and he holds up one of the spent shells. Lucy, looks like Mom took a couple shots at this guy. It's unlike her to miss. She was scared.
Well, I mean, she taught me how to shoot.
Yeah, me too. He kind of stands up, walks a little further. He's going to pick up the rifle. He takes a long moment when he gets the rifle in his hand, and he looks down at the blood. And again, the blood just kind of rushes out of his face, and he just kind of blows some air out of his nose and keeps marching on forward. And when we get into the barn, what type of stuff am I seeing?
You see a trail of blood leading into the center. I imagine it's hard to tell where footprints are in here. There's horses that walk around all the time, hay everywhere. What did you guys do with the noose? Did you cut it down?
Probably crudely. Probably just to get her down as fast as possible, to be honest.
So you see the noose in a corner of the room. And there's a pool of blood on the floor beneath where you can see the severed rope attached to the rafters above, holding the barn up.
So He kind of walks in there. Just, I don't think he spends even all that much time in here, knowing that he's not going to be able to find any footprints or anything of that nature. He kind of walks in, takes a look around, and then like meets the pool of blood on the ground, and again kind of puts his hands over his head. He says, "Ma, you didn't deserve that." And then he turns around, looks at Lucky again, and just kind of gives him a nod, and then he marches back outside. And assuming that Ma was shot, he's going to go and look for the spent cartridge for whoever was here and whoever shot her. So he's going to look for that one specifically if he can find it.
Was Ma shot? I mean, I'd be able to tell.
I mean, it seemed like it. Seemed like she was shot and then continued running or something of that nature.
Yeah, if you checked the night before, then yeah, she was definitely shot once.
Okay.
Just once, though.
I mean, I'd imagine I'd see a bullet hole.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for that cartridge. What? Do I find it?
Harper, you walk inside the house. You see the same things that Lucky saw. You saw the table knocked over, the chair knocked over. And yeah, now that you're paying attention and not frantically searching for your ma like Lucky was, you can, in fact, find the spot where she was shot. Seems that in the kitchen, nearby the stove, the wood-burning stove, there's a splatter of blood on the wall nearby. And there might be some shrapnel to hit that wall too. You know, I don't think the bullet would survive fully, but it's definitely in there. The casing you find near the door after a little bit of peeking around.
So I do find a casing, which means that it was a rifle or a shotgun.
Well, I mean, every bullet has casings.
Yeah, but if it's in a revolver, there's no reason to dump that casing until you reload.
Right. Ooh, that's some investigation right there.
Look at that, Harper.
Look at that investigation bounty hunter.
Look at that in-character bounty
hunter.
Well, turns out I fucked up then, guys, because it's definitely a pistol. Sorry, guys.
It was a Desert Eagle.
It was, yeah.
Deagle.
Came back.
Holy shit, they're from the future, boys.
So I don't find a casing.
Yeah, so you take a look around the house, and you're pretty thorough, and you do not find a casing now.
Okay, so he's gonna walk up, look at the shrapnel that's sitting in the wall and the blood splatter, and he's gonna turn to Lucky, and he's gonna say, "Well, it wasn't a rifle. Gotta be a revolver."
I mean, lots of people use revolvers.
It doesn't help me much. I was hoping to find a casing, find a caliber. No dice.
Steam whistle kind of howls in the background. "How do you like your coffee again?"
"Black."
He walks into the room and grabs it.
Harper, you make your way over to the door, just kind of thinking, you know, there's not too much left to be found in here. And as you put your right hand on the door frame, your eyes move over, and you see there's a cut in the door frame. Almost looks like it was made from an axe.
He's going to kind of run his finger through it. Say, "Lucky, do you spot this?"
Lucky comes in there, hands him a cup, kind of kneels down next to the chip in the wall, takes a sip, and what could cause this?
"Looks like maybe an axe. I don't know, a knife." Is there any damage on the door? Does it look like somebody was trying to break in?
You take a look at the door. You close the door, and right where the cut would go into the door, it doesn't. So it seems the door must have been open at the time.
Yeah, this door was open. Ma wouldn't be using no axe to defend herself if she had a rifle. Makes me wonder. He just kind of like turns around and just kind of like starts rubbing his hand like on his face and takes his hat off, walks over a little ways and sits down.
Lucky puts down his cup. Throws his hands in the air. "Well, ain't this fucked?"
"We're gonna get to the bottom of this. We should probably wait for the others."
We cut to the next day.
Silver Tree Station.
Silver Tree Station. So we cut to Silver Tree Station. It's a tiny little town. It's a mining town. There's not a lot of buildings here. And the train station is really just a train platform. There's one rail running in here. It's a tangent off the main rail that the Denver Pacific Line runs, and it was pretty much run just to pick up silver from the mine that's northeast of the town. Recently, the mines dried up about 7 years ago, and people have started to move away, so not a lot of trains run here these days. The only train today comes into town at 3 o'clock, or it should be 3 o'clock. It's 2 minutes late, 3:02 when it rolls into the station. as the brakes squeal to a halt and the steam whistles up, passengers start coming off the train onto the platform. Probably only about 13 of them in total. Not a lot of passengers through here.
Ma had a lot of friends, I guess. 13 friends.
13's an unlucky number, though.
It's true.
It's one of those real traditional, like, getting off the train shots when Abel steps down, like real close in, zoomed in on his face. He steps down out of the train lightly, adjusts his hat. It's black, very broad brimmed, and pulls the kerchief a little tighter around his neck and adjusts the satchel that he's carrying in his left. He steps to the side and waits for Ellis to set down as well.
Ellis steps down with a suitcase. He's still dressed in the same black, well-tailored suit. He's got the hat on his head. But across his back now is a rifle in a rifle sling. He just carries a single suitcase with just the necessary items he would need for a short trip.
Abel takes a brief look around, and I mean, this is a nice little town. There are, folks walking on the wooden sidewalks with their dresses and walking back and forth between the shops. He kind of takes in the scene and then turns to Ellis, looks him up and down a bit. Well, don't we look like a couple of crows walking into town?
Do you think anybody will still recognize us?
Yeah, I think that answered his question, or that question is answered immediately as Harper starts riding up. Harper and Lucky are riding up on horses that probably our own horses that Ma was keeping for us, just kind of up the street.
Well, I have a horse.
Well, yeah, you got your own horse, but Ma was keeping my horse for me. We're riding up. Maybe some people kind of like catch us out of the corner of their eyes and start like murmuring to themselves.
Definitely,
And somebody kind of shouts out, "Hey, is that Daisy?
Hey, is that Daisy over there?"
I think that's Daisy Crow. Daisy
I think so, Crow. Too.
God damn, that's David Daisy Crow.
God damn, David Daisy, Daisy Crow. Daisy what brings you back to town?
He just rides on by. He gives some people some nods if they were directly acknowledging him. And, waves and tips his hat.
Now, other people might be upset if someone ignores him like that, but for Harper Crow, I think they just sort of smile and talk to themselves,
Oh,
yeah.
That's just Harper's way.
Well, yeah. He definitely gives them, like, warm smiles, but he doesn't really say much at this point. And we kind of ride up to the platform, tie off our horses, and Harper rides a very specific horse. The only reason it's specific is because it's a Mustang, which is, like, the classic gold-colored with the black manes and tails. And they're known for being real rambunctious. There was a period in time, like 5 or 6 years ago, right before Harper left, that they kept telling him not to get this horse, but he got it anyway. He got this wild Mustang, and so he rides up on his Mustang that he's nicknamed Thunder, and he kind of rides up and ties it off and hops off his horse.
Ellis has a Przewalski's wild horse. It's almost an ancient horse, native to Mongolia. No saddle. He's a bareback rider. He's also got a falcon.
Lucky turns to
classy move.
Lucky turns to Harper and says, "Well, quite the celebrity, aren't we?"
Yeah, it looks like it. I reckon our brothers might even get more attention than us.
Goddamn ridiculous.
So he hops off his horse. Walks up to the train station, kind of looks out, looking at faces, and then he catches probably Ellis first, kind of approaches, takes his hat off, and holds it in his hand.
Ellis squints as he kind of looks through the crowd looking for a familiar face. As Daisy Crow rides up on his horse, he instantly recognizes him. He says, under his breath, "Well, goddamn if that's not Daisy Crow."
You guys come up, and I think the camera shot is just sort of in the center. You can see the train in the background, people milling about, and Harper and Ellis enter the frame simultaneously.
Is that Daisy Crow I see?
Well, 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 if it ain't my big brother Ellis, you look well.
Yeah, you don't look too much like a Daisy no more. More like a tumbleweed to me.
You got that right. He kind of moves in for a hug, and it's a little awkward, but it's welcome, I think.
Immediately after, the severity of the situation kind of sets in, and Ellis's face goes to a solemn expression. He says, "So what do you know?"
Well, We'll head back there and I'll show you what I found. Is Abel with you?
All I do is kind of nod to the like point to the side with my face.
Well, shit, Abel. I didn't even recognize you. When'd you get so fat?
Oh. He steps, he grins despite himself and steps forward. Fucking Daisy. Should have pulled you when we had a chance.
He just kind of laughs and then just another hug.
Yeah, definitely another hug. You bring horses?
Yeah, Ma kept some for us. Well, Lucky obviously had his own, but...
Lucky standing about 5 feet behind Harper, leaning real over on his left side onto his... putting most of his weight on his revolver.
Almost didn't recognize you there, Lucky, with those gold teeth. I extend my hand for a handshake instead of a hug.
He would probably know him when he had his gold teeth.
How long have you had those gold teeth there, Lucky?
Long fucking time.
How long? Long fucking time. What's the legal age that someone got can have gold teeth?
If you have enough money, he probably got him around like 14.
Holy shit.
Oh, you did some
history. You think Mama Crow had money?
Hey, you guys grow up young, dude.
Almost didn't recognize you there, Lucky. I extend my hand for a firm handshake.
He skips over the handshake and goes straight for a hug and says, "Nice to meet you too, Pop. Good to see you again."
Cool.
What? Of course.
Well, I don't know what to make of that, Lucky. Well, we got some business to attend. Have you met Abel before? I don't believe you have.
He looks over to him and almost as if he recognizes him instantaneously. It's been 14 goddamn years and you haven't changed a single bit. Maybe a little bit rounder meaner. He goes in for a hug.
Abel picks him up off the ground just with the sheer like excitement of the hug. Picks him up and drops him back rough and shoves him back as brothers do.
Well, goddamn, I didn't know you two were such good friends.
You know me, I'm good friends with everyone.
As you guys embrace and sort of people make their way off the train station, you see a well-dressed man saunter on by you guys while you're exchanging pleasantries, and he makes his way towards the local town marshal's office. And so I believe that there are county sheriffs and town marshals. So there'll be a town marshal of Silvertree. So the well-dressed man, he's carrying a leather bag in his right hand. Almost looks like a doctor's bag, but a little bit bigger, made out of brown leather. He's got a nice suit on that's only a little bit dust-worn, and he walks his way towards the town marshal's office. Trotting past him are two fellas on horses, probably similar in ages to you guys. One of them is taller. He's dressed in all black with a giant hat on. It's one of those wide-brimmed hats.
A 10-gallon hat,
yep. He's wiry and thin. He's got a little bit of facial hair, but sort of the man that probably shouldn't be having facial hair. And at his side...
Abel doesn't take kindly to people having wider hats than him.
Or facial hair.
You give him a scowl.
And his shirt is unbuttoned, so you can kind of see a little bit of chest hair poking out from there. And he's wearing two six shooters on his side. Next to him is another figure, his brother. Do you want to describe his brother for us?
Oh, man. I think he tries to be like his brother a little bit. So, like, he tries to do the open chest thing, but like the top buttons are off just a little bit, so you can see he doesn't have. He probably has a bowler hat, and he doesn't. And like the buttons are just a little off, so he's got like the open chest, but then he's got another button underneath where there's just like some open underneath. He's got probably his beard grows in a little better, but he doesn't keep it well, so it still looks almost as scraggly as the brother who shouldn't grow a beard. And he looks over and he goes, "Hey, yo, Cole, are them Crow boys?"
"Oh, shoot, I reckon it is, Eugene. What the hell you boys doing back in town, huh?"
"What's his name?"
"You know them as the Marston boys, Cole and Eugene. They made a lot of trouble growing up for you guys. Made a lot of trouble in the town, almost as much as you guys, although you guys got in way more trouble for it, seeing as they were the town marshal's sons. Their names are Cole and Eugene." Yeah, he says, "Shoot, Eugene, what do they call it when a whole bunch of crows roll into town, huh?"
"The, well, I imagine it's a whole gaggle of them, aren't it?
It's a murder, you idiot! Come on! What's the matter with you?
Shit, I think Harper, Cole, like, peeks at the word murder. He hears murder out loud and kind of, like, wistfully, like, turns his head. And they meet eyes, specifically yeah. Harper and Cole.
Yeah,
and it's a cold stare from Harper. They hold eyes for just a second, and he just kind of looks back at his brothers and continues talking.
Lucky kind of breaks the glance by sauntering through and then makes eye contact with Cole. Nice hat, Cole. You compensating for anything?
You wish, Lucky. You done seen a few times, haven't you? Peeking in on my room, I'm sure.
Lucky kind of shakes his head.
Good one, Cole.
Thanks, Eugene.
Kind of turns back around to the brothers, ignoring these guys completely.
Isn't your dad a little tired of carrying your weight?
At least my dad's still around there, Ellis. You boys only roll into town when your mama dies? Ain't you got no respect? She's been working her whole lives to take care of you lot, and you only show up when she's dead? Shoot, she won't even know.
You hold your goddamn tongue,
Harper,
Cole.
Puts his hand out and calms down Lucky a little bit.
Unlike you, we've been making something of ourselves.
Hey, now. No need to turn this into a shootout. He kind of turns back around. Says, you boys move right on along. Have yourselves a pleasant day.
Well, I'm surprised at you, Daisy.
Well, that's the bigger man.
That's the smartest thing I ever heard him say.
Better not see you two at the funeral.
Hey, at least your mama raised one boy, right? And he tips his hat and rides off. Says, come on, Eugene.
I was going to pay my respects. Meadow was a... All right, Cole, I'm with you.
As they ride off, you guys just hear in the distance Cole yell out,
I turned to Harper. I'm surprised those two are still alive.
And we all.
You guys see the town marshal step out from his office and talk to the suited gentleman that walked into town. He looks down to the train station with the platform. He kind of puts on his hat and squints his eyes at you guys, and his face lights up. He's an older man, a bigger man. And pretty much exactly what you'd expect in a town marshal, you know. Worn clothes he's used his whole life. Bit of a pushover as far as you guys have known him. He's always let his son sort of roll over him in any altercation y'all have ever had. But as far as you guys know, he's always been a nice man. And, yeah. He waves to you guys and says, hey, come on over here, boys.
Harper looks over his shoulder and sees the guy with the bag, and he sees the marshal, and he says, I reckon that's the mortician.
You guys approach, and the suited gentleman, the mortician, and the town marshal, Clay, turn towards you guys. He looks at each of you in turn.
Well, Ellis, I haven't seen you in a long time. It's good to see your face, boy.
Well, thank you. I wish it was under better circumstances.
I do, too. I'm sorry about your ma, boys. Lord had no right taking a woman like her from this earth.
I don't think it was the Lord's doing.
I reckon you had a look.
He looks at Lucky, and he says, well, I think that's up for the mortician to decide. I think my business is keeping this town safe, and his business is checking out your ma.
Last I heard from ma, she was in good health and good spirits.
I mean...
That she was.
Well, you know as well as I do, Lucky, your mom... Well, she's a troubled woman. Folk that move around as often as her and your pa did, I mean, it's hard for them to find peace in this world.
Hey. I'm smelling what you're saying. Well, that didn't make any sense.
I'm smelling what you're saying.
I'm smelling a lot.
And I like it.
Hey. I know what you're getting at. I found some spent shells, blood on a rifle. Looks like somebody busted in.
He takes off his hat and scratches his head and says, well, I didn't find any of that, but... Man, I reckon you know better than I do. Nothing like this ever happens around here.
That's Lucky kind of interrupts and, can we just see the body, please?
He nods and motions you on inside. He says, this the mortician. He came up from Denver. His name's Jackson Pollock. That's a good name, I guess.
I like that.
Why'd you have to bring in somebody from Denver?
Well, we don't have no local mortician here, Ellis. I know
Still?
You're... Well, I know you're... Where are you living now?
I'm living in Dodge, Kansas.
Well, that explains it. They got everything under the sun in Dodge City. But out these parts, I mean, we kind of have to rely on people from the big cities to help us out. Morticians, judges, he points towards Abel. Maybe gives you a little squint as he says that.
How'd you know he was a judge there?
Me and your ma used to talk a lot before she passed. Anyway, come on inside. He motions you guys inside. You make your way through the town marshal's office. Inside, it's kind of dimly lit. The sun's coming through the windows. Her body's in the back. One of the jail cells has been opened, and a table's been drawn in there, and her body's laying on it with a sheet covering it.
Well, goddamn, can't we get some light in here?
Do you smoke, Thaddeus?
No, but he drinks.
Damn, that's unfortunate.
That's not going to help us at all.
He smokes for this one
check
scene.
Class don't create no light.
You guys see, as you say that, Ellis, you see the strike of a match inside that jail cell as a figure lights a lantern and closes the hood around it and places it on the nearby table. What does Thaddeus Crowe look like, Marshall?
Well, I think he's got his back turned to the door, so as they come in, they don't see him necessarily. They just see, almost harkening back to the last outlaw that Harper ever brought in. You know, it looks a little ramshackle, raggedy clothes. You know, he's got a walking stick with a couple backpacks hanging off the top of it. His large mining hat rested on the top of it. And you just sort of see a figure sort of hunched over, looking at the body mindlessly and absentmindedly shuffling some cards in his left hand after he sets down the lantern, takes a swig out of his flask. I think he kind of looks over his shoulder as he does so, sees, oh, shit.
I see you got my telegram.
Ellis, it's good to see you.
Good to see you, too. And
he immediately puts away his flask, walks on over, gives Ellis a big old hug. No, I'm so thankful that you sent me that letter. I'm glad we could be here. And he looks over to his side. Is that Daisy? Daisy, I can't believe. Walks over, slaps you on the shoulder.
Daisy takes a step back. For sure. He takes a step back and looks at you, a little confused. He says, I fear you got me at a disadvantage, Rem.
Well, shit, I suppose that's fair. You weren't knee-high to grasshopper last time I saw you. It's me. It's Thaddeus, Daisy.
He kind of takes a second, looks around, looking for reassurance from his brothers. Probably doesn't get much from anybody but from Ellis.
I think that Abel shifts the pack over into his left hand to leave his right hand free and probably shifts like half a step closer to Harper, kind of protectively.
Come on, don't you recognize your own brother?
It's been a long time. He kind of goes in for like a really half-hearted hug. Like he knows that he should hug his brother, but doesn't necessarily want to. Yeah. So he goes in, gives him the hug, and kind of almost immediately moves past him to the body.
Thaddeus grabs you. he grabs and squeezes tight. Oh, boy, it's good to see you. I ain't never seen... I had hoped.
Hope for what?
Pat you back. Oh, that you could have turned out like you did. You're looking good, boy. And pat you again on the other shoulder as you try to shuffle past. Sort of looks over at Abel as he kind of stepped in. Kind of wordlessly for a moment, hangs on it, nods at him, says, Abel?
Thaddeus.
It's good to see you're in health.
And you would take something like this to bring you home.
Well, hey now, we've all left home.
True. True.
Lucky steps in and breaks the tension. Well, goddamn, I got a new brother, it seems.
Gold teeth flashing.
Yeah. Oh, well... shit, you got me at a disadvantage. Ellis? Harper?
Have you not been acquainted yet to Lucky?
You ain't never met Lucky?
I don't think I have.
Well, you're in for some treat, partner.
Little jackdaw flew into the nest, huh?
What?
You got that right.
Look it up.
He's a good man.
That was a good bird reference.
What the hell is a jackdaw?
They're a cousin of the crows and ravens, guys.
That's very interesting.
They're close, but not quite.
Where'd you learn about that, Thaddeus? You got a field guide on you? I'm quite partial to the Smithsonian Institution's field guide to birds myself. You know.
Well, Lucky goes in for a real firm handshake, and he says, "Well, Thaddeus, you got quite the reputation, I'll say that much."
Lucky feels a bit of a limp return at first, like he doesn't know what's going on, and then, you know, sort of firms up and shakes. But, well, I hope it wasn't all true. I'll look to maybe prove you wrong on some of it. But if you cared about Mama, I appreciate you being here.
She was a goddamn angel.
The mortician takes a step forward, kind of pulls on his suspenders a little bit, and he says, "Well, this is a touching reunion and all, but I'm going to take care of the body if you boys don't mind."
"Well, not before we get the chance to look at it."
"Well, that's sort of my job, isn't it?"
"If you don't mind, I'd like to pay my respects to Mama before you go to town."
He sighs, takes off his spectacles, rubs them with you know, some sort of fucking cloth. A handkerchief, goddammit.
Handkerchiefs are important.
Yeah. Rubs it with a handkerchief and just takes a step back and kind of sighs and points towards the body.
"Now, Harper, from what I gather, you're good at this kind of thing. Would you mind taking a look?"
"Well, I'll take a look, see. Don't know what I'll be able to find." And he looks over at the mortician and gives him a nod. "Thank you much. It means an awful lot to us."
"It's fine."
Is Ma covered right now?
She does have a sheet covering her entirely, yeah.
No, she was uncovered a little bit. I drew back the cloth to look at Mama one last time.
Fuck.
So the first thing you see is her face, dead and cold, gray with a little bit of blue on it. Her forehead seems to be smeared in a red substance you only can assume is blood.
"Now, what exactly did you find, Harper?"
He's choking on his words as he kind of pulls down the tarp and kind of starts going over her little by little. He says, "Well, I found some spent casings from a rifle. Rifle had some blood on it. Looks like somebody busted in, caught her off guard, probably shot her with a pistol. She ran off."
"That's what I was worried about."
"Yeah, this is murder for sure. Looks like I've ever seen one.
It's going to be a longer trip than I planned."
"She retreated back to the barn. They caught up and hung her." And he's kind of going over the body. I'm assuming an investigation roll.
"Now, yeah, Ellis, I believe."
Yeah, roll investigation.
"Now, Harper, I believe it's hanged when you're referring to a person."
"Was there any sort of, like..."
Fuck off.
"Or, Caleb."
"Was there any sort of a cult type marking in the blood that was put on her head? Is it worth a roll?"
"No, it's not worth a roll." "Okay, cool. Thank you." So, Harper, while you look over the bird, the body, the mortician sort of pulls on his suspenders again. He says, "Listen, folks get sad, especially around parts like this. I mean, the mine was dried up a few years back. I mean, I wouldn't jump straight to murder. I know you're in mourning and all, but..."
Lucky snaps a real cold look at this mortician, and he says, "Why don't you shut the hell up and let us mourn for just one second.
Hey, Lucky, ain't no reason to get fired up. Hey, Mr. Mortician, why don't you come over here and have a look at this and try to tell me that again," as he uncovers the bullet wound.
Harper, you pull back the sheet from her and you find instantly the bullet wound on her leg, her left leg. And as you look in it, you're not a doctor or anything, but you can tell from where it's placed it went straight through the bone, which means that for her to be walking to that barn, she must have a lot of adrenaline running through her. You take a look at that, look around at her body. Looks like she was just in her nightgown at the time, and that's all that's on her at the moment. You start to roll her over on her side, and the mortician helps you. And on her back, you can tell that part of her nightgown was cut open, almost with a knife. As you look through it, though, you can see it didn't hit skin, whatever cut through it. Just managed to get her clothes as you push her back over onto her back.
See that hole down the leg? Obviously a bullet of some kind now. I found some blood splatter about 15 yards away from the barn. See, she drug herself there, one foot, one dragging, dropped her rifle. This was a fight."
The mortician nods and looks to the corner where Clay Marston and Abel are talking. "Abel, you pulled him over there," and he says, "What's this about, Abel?"
I ain't been around for a while. You know, you were always close with Ma. She been in any pressure lately? Any situations?
He looks around. He looks a little embarrassed as he turns back towards you and says, "Nothing like that, Abel. You know, she was pretty happy. She spoke to you boys, wish you'd come back more often, but as far, I mean, she was in good spirits last time I saw her, so I don't think so. I don't think anything like that."
"I ask on account of my brothers. They ain't sad. He's wrong. They're murderous. Someone's gonna pay, Sheriff. It's best to help us if you point us in the right direction."
You can tell he's definitely lying to you in some way. And even though he's lying to you, though, it doesn't really seem like he's willing to talk about whatever he's holding back.
Okay. Can I try a persuasion roll?
Yes, please. Go for it. What's your persuasion?
5 on the 6, 2 on the 4.
Hey, that's perfect. 4 is a success. Yeah, so it's going to go well for you. So
I think Abel leans in.
"We're both men of the law. I'll hold it just as sacred as you do. Now, help me keep somebody from getting hanged wrong."
He looks at you, honestly, with a little bit of teary eyes, and he says, "Listen, Abel, I swear, I know you and me and your ma shouldn't have been doing that, but, you know, neither of us was ready to get remarried. And, you know, me and your ma, we loved each other, Abel, but we... ain't nobody had any intent to murder her. I ain't heard of anybody like that. Ain't nobody. No, sir. No strangers rode into town that day. I didn't hear nothing that day. All I knew was Lucky rode into town and your ma was dead."
"There ain't no sin in taking pleasure with another person. However, if you're lying to me, I hold that on your name and that of your boys."
And Abel walks away.
As you walk away, you see the mortician motion to the town marshal to come over. "Marshal, come take a look at this." Town marshal wipes away his eyes and walks over to the body. He looks at the gun wound through the leg, looks at the cut in the back, and goes, "Listen, boys, I don't know who could have done this. I don't know what kind of leads I can pull up. I mean, there's not much you can do in a situation like this." And that's when you guys hear the ringing sound of gunfire, a single shot outside of the town marshal's office in the streets.
Pew, pew.
Yeah, spot on, dude. Yeah.
Wow, crazy.
Thaddeus snaps his head.
Wow. The agency. Production quality.
Bloop.
Production quality, for sure.
This guy fucked Ma, by the way.
That's what I heard. Hey, that was none of our business. What I gathered. That's Ma's business.
We got to kill this
she
guy.
Knew, Ma's only.
He knew her in the biblical sense, and that makes me uncomfortable.
Hey, she is only my father, so really we should be happy.
Yeah, he's your stepdad. Call him stepdad.
No. The only love she ever had was Pa, all right? For all his faults, God damn it.
He's still alive, by the way. He's not dead.
Yeah, he's definitely.
So you guys stop down this conversation after hearing the gunfire, you know?
Hey, gunfire ain't enough.
So Harper immediately, as soon as he hears gunfire, instead of reaching for his revolver, he's gonna like duck below the window, and he's gonna move over to his duffel bag that he dropped when he first entered, and he's gonna pull out his 73 Winchester rifle.
Perfect. What are the rest of you doing?
I'm bolting for the staff that was leaned up against the wall. I'm going to shake it loose of the hat and the two backpacks, revealing that there's a spear tip at the end of it. Ooh. And I'm going to duck down low next to Daisy near a window.
Ellis smirks. "What you got in that bag there, Daisy?"
"Just about everything I need for living. I reckon you get down, there's gunfire out there."
"Yeah, I bet it'll resolve itself."
Thaddeus, as you peer out the window, you can see that a wagon's rolled into town. Not dissimilar to the payroll wagons you saw up in Sioux Nation that you spent your time up there. Payrolls probably going to miners or something like that. And nearby are is one figure on a horse and two figures on the ground. One of them has a pistol drawn, the one on the horse, and he's holding it at a woman in a cowboy hat and a Stetson hat who's holding up the carriage and the four horses.
I sort of shoot over my shoulder. "We got a robbery out here."
"It's none of our business."
"The hell it ain't. Harper,
it's my business.
Oh, that's not the voice. Holy shit.
It was pretty close.
It was close.
Yeah, it was
pretty
close.
That's
none of our business.
That's good. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Sounds Like Crows. If you like what we do and you want to check out some more stuff, you can check out our Twitter at Sounds of Crows or our Facebook at www.facebook.com/SoundsLikeCrows.
The cast of Sounds Like Crows is as follows. Luciano Lucky Crow is played by Cameron Day. Ellis Crow is played by Alex Horrell. Thaddeus Crow is played by Marshall Sims. Harper Crow is played by Cameron Reed. And Abel Crow is played by Isaac Sunstead. You can find out more about us or contact us at soundslikecrows.com. We'd love to hear your feedback.